Well, the paper has a story talking about how the charges for Chris Barella, the jailer, should perhaps more properly been different. So I had mentioned that a possibility. But good morning to you, Kelly O'Connell here, 6:06 on the 11th of December. It's creeping up. Christmas is creeping up. Or possibly Kwanzaa, if you're into Kwanzaa, you know? Anyway, so we've still got a lot of stuff going on with the jail, their turmoil in the county. Just when you thought the county couldn't get any more dysfunctional, and I was able to talk to Kiki last night, and so we had a nice long conversation about the whole situation. Kiki is coming on Monday. And he's going to come in, I believe, at 7 o'clock. I have another guest at 6 o'clock with the state Democrats. So, well, actually, it's through the Cato Institute. It's not it was arranged by a gentleman from the Democratic Party, but a person who's going to be coming on. And I'll tell you about that particular. And it's something on identification, Homeland Security, all this business. So we'll get into that on Monday. But we're going to have Kiki here, and I believe he's going to bring Sergeant Barlow or whatever his position, his rank is, and somebody else as well. So anyway, hope you're staying warm out there. It is, give you an up-to-date temperature right now, if my phone will kick in here. But, yeah, it's not too, it didn't strike me as too cold last night. I didn't really kind of wake up in the middle of the night shivering at all. But, all right, so they found out more about these killers from this husband and wife killer team. Did it ever occur to you that this guy, it's 38 degrees, by the way, but this guy went on a murderous rampage after he saw his wife without her burqa and realized that it could be a man? Just saying. Maybe that's what tipped him over the edge. But they found out that these two were planning more escapades. They were going to go in and I guess they were going after a school full of kids. So I decided to, bearing in mind that I've spent a fair amount of time studying Islam and radical Islam and Sharia law and everything, I did a little bit of a search, and I just put in my search terms were, you know, what do Muslim radicals hope to gain by killing? And a number of articles came up that said that they were, there was a number of course, the traditional statement, Islam is a religion of peace. That came up, of course, and I listened to a few videos, and it amazes me the number of people that are willing to say with an absolute straight face, Islam is a religion of peace. That are, you know, typically Muslims, but a lot of times they're not Muslims. They're people. I think there's a lot of people that will stand up and say that Islam is a peaceful religion without ever having spent 1 minute actually studying it, which I find kind of a fascinating thing. I believe that these people believe in this set of ideas where all religions are made out of the same stuff, you know. It's like Legoland. Everything's made out of Legos. So, anyway. I found that there was no clear explanation that, you know, one guy was giving this speech about how Islam is peaceful. It doesn't try to kill innocent people. And then there was this number of verses that were brought up and everything. So you know how the conversation goes. And the upshot was that some people were asking, is it the ambition of Islam to kill all non-believers? Now, as crazy as that sounds, I mean, that would be a lot of work to begin with, but there is a part of the story of Islam, the what I have brought up to you before, the Mahdi, the Messiah. The Messiah is probably, I think, more well developed in Shiaism, but these two beliefs that are, as we were told by Edward yesterday, they hate each other. The Sunni and the Shia, you know, the difference between the two. One believes in the activities of God on earth, and his, really what the Shias are looking for is for, it's kind of closer to Christianity, this idea, you know, Jesus comes to earth as God, but in Shiaism, you've got this kind of this descendant of the prophet that comes, and in Sunniism, which is the 90% of 85%, whatever, they don't believe that's shirk. That's associating anything created with God is shirk. But they believe that, I believe that God is going to be coming to, or God will have his Messiah. They both believe this idea, but the Shia have developed this better, the 12ers, the 7ers, the 12ers. And so in ISIS is Sunni. This is kind of confusing. ISIS is Sunni, but their Mahdi, their apocalypse, is Shia. And so, and I know that I mentioned this before, I just want to mention it again, though, so you can get your head wrapped around this idea. They believe that in creating a modern caliph or a modern state that is led by a right leader and therefore is applying Sharia law, they believe that they are paving the way for the Mahdi to come out of what they call occultation. Now, to occult something means to cover it, or that something is covered. So when there's an eclipse, the earth is covering basically it's kind of covering over the moon, right? So that's an occultation. So they believe that this Mahdi is in hiding, or that what they call the Gaiba. And at the proper time, he's going to come out of hiding. And in his activities, his abilities, and his love for humanity and for his bringing paradise on earth and healing everybody, he'll be a lot like Jesus. A lot of these ideas, according to some of the scholars that I've read, are heavily influenced or borrowed from Jewish and Christian concepts. Of course, because the Quran is supposed to be the third leg of the Bible. At that time, though, when the Mahdi comes, he will go to Mecca, the holy city, Medina, the city of refuge. Then he goes to Jerusalem and meets Jesus, and he asks Jesus, "Would you like to pray?" And Jesus says, "No, my Lord, you know, please go ahead." The Mahdi gets down and gives the prayer to God, and then when they get up, they go out and kick butt. And they do go out and execute, basically, from what I can gather, all of the non-believers. And Jesus, during this time, also straightens out the record that he was never a Christian, that he was not there for Christianity, that he was Muslim, basically. So anyway, this idea of killing a bunch of people for God is at some point in the Muslim story at the end, in the Muslim apocalypse. So, but it is kind of a crazy idea that you would go in to a school full of children and kill them all, blow them up, kill them all, burn the school down, and then claim that you're acting for God. These are, I think some of the things that have made it hard for people to get their minds wrapped about around some of the claims of Islam. So anyway, let's take a break. 6:16, Kelly O'Connell. Got to go grab my first cup of coffee. And 523-1450. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. And 6:17 on the button. We'll come back and pick this up a little bit more. I want to talk a little, I think Bryce is calling in, but I want to talk a little bit more about what's some of the stuff going on with the sheriff and the county commission. All right, so it's 6:21. I think 37 degrees out there, and yeah, we've got a story on the front page. Chris Barela did not pocket the money. Fraud charges stems from allegations he misappropriated money for inmates. A poorly regulated inmate fund is at the center of the fraud investigation involving Christopher Barela, the embattled Doniana County Detention Center administrator who was arrested Tuesday. And so just looking at this article here, the money for the fund comes from commissary sales, and Aramark operates the commissary, and that's where the inmates buy stuff. And in New Mexico, there are no laws that regulate such funds, including how money in a fund can be spent. And in 2009, a former county auditor, Milton Duran, concluded that the detention center's policies regarding the inmate welfare fund were not well defined and that some of the funds were being misused. The policy was revised in February. So I would say that, you know, so for embezzlement means that, and I've mentioned this before, so pardon me for going over this again, but embezzlement means that you take something that you have control over, you rightfully have control over, and you turn it into your own stuff. So it sounds like that the charge of embezzlement may have been misstated in this thing. I don't know. I'm just going off of what I'm reading here. In September, County Attorney Nelson, the writing in this paper kills me. Nelson Gooden, by the way, he doesn't go by a single. He's not like Elvis. He doesn't go by a single name. In September, County Attorney Nelson gave a PowerPoint presentation on the inmate welfare fund before the Board of County Commissioners. And one side suggested that the money from the fund can be used to provide the following: cable TV services, prison ministries, books, games, exercise equipment, hygiene products for indigent inmates. Inmate labor glasses, and et cetera. There's a big et cetera there, County Spokesman Jess Williams said Thursday. It's kind of wide open, and it gives the director a lot of discretion on how to use the funds. So, all right, so let me get into that a little bit later. But the question is 523-1450, and this is going to be the question for the people's minds and, the residents of Doña Ana, and it's also going to be on the judge's mind and such as to whether the case is properly charged. So now the charges can be revised, of course. No harm in doing that. But I did spend some time on the phone with Kiki last night, and he feels like what he did was, suffice it to say that he was operating not just out of the law, but out of common sense, and that there was a reason that they went into the jail, and that that it was not going to be a permanent takeover, that he was just securing it until they could get a structure there. That's what I was informed. So picture of Ken Roberts and Kiki and Eddie Lerma on the front page. You know, it is kind of a wild story. And I'll tell you once again, I thought that the if you've seen the clip, and I'm sure that you probably at this point have seen the clip, that there was this lady downtown, Julia Brown, comes up and interrupts this news conference to deliver the paperwork. I thought it was one of the rudest and most entertaining things I'd ever seen. I couldn't believe it. And basically she was saying, you think that you're having a news conference on this, but you're not. Here's your paperwork. Get out of here. And how dare you? So, but it was, you know, it was entertaining stuff, but I'm sure deeply embarrassing for the sheriff, and it had to be embarrassing somewhat, I would think. Maybe I'm wrong, but somewhat for the county commission. Maybe they just said that's a little bit of payback, but it seemed like something out of the neighborhood, you know. So anyway, let me read you a few headlines here. I'm going to come back to the jail thing, but I just want to throw your headlines out for you. ISIS may have a passport printing machine. That's something to make you sleep all at night, isn't it? Feds launch facial eye scans of foreigners entering from Mexico. Well, that would be nice if the people entering from Mexico weren't, you know, the vast majority of people sneaking over the border weren't getting through the 95%. And then never showing up to court if they get the ones that got caught. I mean, almost 100% of the people get to stay here. Muslim population in the United States is going to double. And this administration is moving heaven and earth, by the way, to get as many Muslims into the country as possible. So how do you feel about that? Now, when I go to the opinion polls and I read you things, I'll just kind of randomly pull one up here. If I can get my computer to computer has its own theory on cooperation and stuff. So I think I need to get an exorcist for the computer. All right. When I read for you something along the lines from this, there's the page of all this polling. Most of it fairly recent. World public opinion, 61% of Egyptians approve of attacks on Americans, 32% of Indonesians, 41% of Pakistanis, 38% of Moroccans, 83% of Palestinians, 62% of Jordanians, 42% of Turks. And when you read that there is a lot of residual belief in Islam and the Islamic doctrines of leadership and war and what it means to be in a country or in a state and the power or the right of the governments and everything. And basically you can see that there is at least a fair amount of support for things that we would consider to be highly disruptive to running a stable society. When you see that, do you say to yourself, we need more of these people here? Now, the Muslims that are here, I do think that you've got to not only accommodate them, but treat them with all the deference of any other resident or citizen in America. They're here already. They're taking part. But people are going to ask, what percentage of those people, you know, and we do have polling on that. We have polling on what percentage of American Muslims support defense in violence in defense of Islam, Sharia law, honor killings, as these type of things. Now, I got into a little research last night. There is a website out there that's putting some of these stats together, and there's a claim, I don't know if it's true or not, I'd have to do some more research, but there was an article that said 95% of child rape and molestation convictions in the United Kingdom were committed by Muslims. Now, that, first of all, you have to ask if that's true. It's either true or it's not. But if it is true, then you have to ask yourself, is there a different way of looking at sex and women and children in Islam? And this is from the Times of London, from Paul Rogers. These are the results of an investigation into child grooming, child rape in the UK. There are gangs of Muslims that are working. I think there is, especially in the Midlands, in the center of the country, there were a number of, and apparently somewhat involved with the taxi drivers too, but there were in one town, there were thousands and thousands of molestations and rapes and trafficking of British girls for Islam. Not for Islam, but for sex trafficking, and it was really kind of shocking, the numbers. And so, anyway, I just thought I'd throw that at you. That's been in the news for a while, and they said that the reason that the authorities hadn't done anything about it was because basically a political correctness, that the authorities were afraid of being charged with being racist. There's one last thing I want to say about Trump. Support him or hate him. Technically, you have to say, when he says we need to stop Muslims coming into the country until we can get the immigration process figured out, that is, I've heard a lot of people misstate this. That is not a racial statement, because there is, in every race in the world, there are Muslims. So it's a religious statement. So, you know, you might consider that just as bad, but it's not. I've heard a lot of people say that he's a racist and a bigot. He might be, I have no idea, but those particular statements are about a religion and not a race, and I think it behooves us to keep these things clear in our mind. You're listening to Kelly O'Connell, 633 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE, 523-1450, 523-1450. Kelly, who's this?
Hey, Sergio. Good morning, Kelly. How are you doing this Friday?
Good. Sounds like you're running a bandsaw.
Oh, no. So I'm over here at Big O's. Get my tire checked. He's running an air blower. Sorry about that. Hey, I want to let you know real quick before you get back on the air. I was hearing last night that Canada is going to get a lot up to 2,000 Syrians here pretty quick, and 20,000 before long, and up to something like 100,000 in a year.
Hi, this is Kelly. Who's this?
Rebecca.
I'm going to put you on hold, okay? I got somebody else. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Hey, Sergio.
Yes.
Sergio.
Yes.
I'm sorry I had to put you on hold. I got another call, but did you want to say something on the air?
Well, okay, I guess. If this seems like a bother, you know.
All right, I'll put you on hold. I'm sorry, did you say this is Rebecca?
Yes.
Okay, Rebecca, what are we going to talk about?
I'm upset that we're letting the immigrants in from Syria, and I think that we should be allowing Christians in.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. Let me put you on hold, and I'll bring on the comment, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Has it come?
It's Kelly, and we do have a call from Rebecca, and Rebecca is not happy about the administration fighting to bring in Muslims and denying Christians the opportunity to emigrate out of these same areas. Rebecca, is that correct?
That is correct, yes. According to what I have read, they're sending Christians back, and there's a group of Christians, families, that are having a hard time getting out of the airport there. And Nazarenes have a foundation that they have raised millions, and they're having a hard time getting the Christians out. And when the Christians get here, they send them back.
Yeah. Now, here's the question that everybody should think about a little bit is, in this country of ours, the president is decision-making on this, and whoever else, is, have we really reached the point where we want to prefer Muslim immigrants? I mean, is that seems to me absolutely crazy.
To me, too, because the Christians are being beheaded. They are being driven out. They are living a life of misery under that, and they are not safe.
No, not at all. And they're being raped, and they're being sold into sex slavery. And they've even put out a pamphlet, How to Treat Your Sex Slave, over there. And
I know.
So, you know, it's just and they especially like these some of these women from the Yazidis or the Christians. But they take them to slave markets, and they will sell them for $10 a piece. It is like something out of the medieval world.
It is. It really is. I cannot believe that Christians are having to go through what they're going through, and that the world isn't doing something about it.
Well,
we need to bring the Christians in.
We are the world when it comes to putting out demand and enforcing human rights anywhere around the world. That's why when the president says we need to back off and let other countries take up the slack, that's totally unrealistic. But there is a pattern in this president. He consistently he's consistently fomenting changes that undermine American society, and I think he's doing it. I think he's laughing inside. I mean, the fact that he didn't go into Syria and help out when he drew a red line, and now there's millions of displaced people, and he's giving us a hard time about not wanting to take them in when they might be ISIS fighters. But he doesn't take any responsibility for having caused the situation.
I agree. And what we need to do is, those people need to stay near Middle East. They need safe zones. They need places to stay that would be safe for them. And then bring the Christians.
Yeah. Bring the Christians. They already believe what we believe.
I agree. And I think that we could do a lot to keep them close to where they are. Ben Carson did say that they want to stay in their own countries, then they would prefer that than to be here.
Well, I'm sure that a lot of the people would like to be here for the standard of living and the safety and everything, but when they come here, it's not it's Sharia country, so all of these people ultimately want to live under Sharia law.
I can't believe it. I can't believe that.
This president is out of his mind. And past couple of press conferences that he's held, it is, you know, he's been put in a position where his real beliefs are coming to the surface, and people are absolutely horrified to find out that he's going to attack gun owners, but he's going to, you know, the problem is gun ownership in America.
In the process of getting a pistol.
Good.
And I've never felt before like I needed one, but I'm going to get one.
I would call. I agree, Rebecca.
I want to show the president that I have a right to do that.
I agree, Rebecca. And whether you're Republican or Democrat, go out and get a pistol. I'm having Harry Stryker. I stopped by and talked to Harry Stryker of Stryker's World, the gun shop in town. He's going to come on. And on Wednesday, and we're going to talk about guns, and we're going to talk about the Second Amendment rights. Thanks for the call, Rebecca. Sergio, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I couldn't quite understand what you said previously, so let's roll it out again.
Okay, well, first of all, I think Rebecca's right, you know. And but what I was going to say was that I was hearing on the first America's First News on the same station earlier this morning that Canada is going to let 2,000 initially let in 2,000 Syrians in, and then up to 20,000 before long, and up to 100,000 in the near future. Now, my comment is that my concern is that they're going to slip through the Canadian borders, which is practically as bad as the the southern border.
Yeah.
In here, and so this is like a hose with a lot of holes in it. The water's spreading everywhere, you know.
I think we're getting the hose.
So, and like what Rebecca says is right. I mean, if this is a double standard that's insidious.
Yeah, it is. It is. Thanks for the call. I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing that call. There's a little static there, but good points from Rebecca and Sergio. All right, folks, let's take another break here. I've got so many stories here, but let me just mention a few more things about Islam to you. Is it proper and right differentiate between the law-abiding and the nonviolent Muslims and the jihadists or the radicals? Of course it is. How would you like to be in somebody else's country and suddenly your people group or your religion is under fire? You would feel a certain sense of desperation, right? I mean, they're following the laws. You're a law-abiding citizen, but it is contingent upon the Muslims. Too, you know, the Islam is kind of notorious for not taking care of their own stuff because I think they're nervous. I'll take one more call here. I'm about to go to break, but I'll take a brief call. Who's this?
This is Jerry. Hey, Kelly. Next week, the House of Representatives is going to pass the bill, the budget bill.
Yeah.
In that budget bill is funding for refugees. Please call your congressman and give him your voice, whether you are supported or not. I'm sure there's more people do not support it. Please call your congressman.
Okay, thanks, Jerry. Now, Jerry doesn't say what the money is exactly for. All right, so, well, I have to do some investigation into that. Anyway, it is, you know, we're a Christian country, our Christian roots, hospitality and everything. We do need to give people the benefit of the doubt. And, I mean, what I mean to say by that is that the people that are either staying here as guests or they are living here as Muslims need to be given not only every legal protection, but the benefit of the doubt, and also to be treated with graciousness. At the same time, it is contingent upon Muslims to police themselves and to differentiate. Let people know I am totally against jihad. I am, you know, and you might say, well, it goes without saying. No, it doesn't. There's a lot of these people, according to the polls, and that's why there's drama, there's ferment in these issues, is because there's a fair number of people that do believe these doctrines that are totally un-American. Anyway, it is a time of drama. It is a time of crisis. It's a time of war. 646 Kelly O'Connell AM Lachusis, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. And we're going to be back to pick it up a little bit further.
For 12 days, now through December 21st, drop off your donations of canned food at Crawford.
All right, so 6:49, but, you know, think about this thing. You're just think about this. You're a Muslim living in America, and you hear the top politician, the most popular political person, get up and say your people should be banned from coming into the country. Of course, it's going to immediately throw you on your heels in terms of what your status is. But I can assure you, and we know that Donald Trump tends to over-exaggerate to start off a topic. You know, we're gonna deport 11 million people. Anybody with any common sense knew that he was not going to deport 11 million people, but that's how the conversation starts. That's how he gets people's attention. He immediately backtracked or defined his statement to say, people that are here, that's different. You know, people that live here, that's different. But he's, you know, he said visitors and people trying to emigrate, we've got to stop the immigration until we figure out what's going on. Now, that was part of the original statement, but it's not reported because it's easier and it's a lot more fun to say somebody's a bigot and a racist and that they're out of their mind than it is to put in the details that help to understand his position. His position, I think, is reasonable. Who in their right mind would want someone to move in from an area that they really didn't understand, but they knew was a war zone and had a certain percentage of radical, violent, anti-Western terrorists coming out of it? Would you want that person to move in next door? I mean, there's two sides to this thing. You know, we got to look at both sides. All right, here's a clip. Sun Princess discusses being Muslim in El Paso, and she's at UTEP.
So ABC 7's Darren Hunter, who is not only Muslim, but also a UTEP student and Sun Princess with a 2015 Sun Bowl cord. And she has a beautiful name, too.
She does. Her name is Hala Abdel Jabbar, Estella, and she's finding these are turbulent times at a special moment in her life. In the wake of the Santa Bernardino attacks and recent comments from Donald Trump about banning Muslims from the U.S., Hala had a lot to say about what's happened during the past couple of weeks here in America.
The number one thing when I applied to be a Sun Princess was mainly because I wanted to show that it's okay to be different.
Hala Abdel Jabbar is not only a Sun Bowl princess, but a senator at large for the UTEP Government Association. Her parents are from Kuwait, but she's red, white, and blue through and through.
I was born and raised in the States. Yes, I do represent my culture very, very heavily, but I think at the same time, I am as American comes.
And that's why she condemns the San Bernardino attackers, including a Muslim woman.
When I learned that it was a Muslim woman, I was deeply hurt as a Muslim woman because that's not what our culture stands for or our religion stands for. And now I feel that as a Muslim woman, I am being targeted because of the actions of another.
Paula told me she feels the stares, especially over the past couple of weeks.
I have been called a terrorist just because I say that I'm Muslim, and it hurts.
It was only made worse by Donald Trump's recent comments.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
It's just really, really hurtful to know that a country that I've grown to know and love, there are people in this country that don't want me here, and that's the hardest thing.
She was brought to tears when I asked her if her parents are concerned about her.
It's a scary thing to think about, and at the end of the day, I trust where I live, and I hope that the El Paso community accepts me for who I am and accepts me, Muslim and all.
Hala told me, Estella, that she doesn't hate Donald Trump for what he said, but sees it as an opportunity, rather, to explain the real meaning of Islam and become a stronger person at the end of the day.
All right, so let's take a little break here, and I've got some more. I'm going to bring on some... I've got some more stuff about, there was a meeting last night and Kiki and I talked about this and there's a few clips. So we do have a call here. This is Kelly. I'm running out of time, but who's this?
Hey, it's Karen. I'll just make it real quick. That young woman you just had from the TV news.
Yeah.
That shows the extreme. Everybody's heart should break over that story. And then you juxtapose it next to this family where even the mom and dad of the male knew he was an extremist.
Well, you know, hey, Karen,
family never even saw the United States.
Karen, you know, you don't tell me that someone is making bombs in their small two-story house and has 5 or 10,000 rounds of ammunition and you didn't realize something was going on. Give me a break. You know, I'm so sick of being talked down to by various people who assume that nobody can put two and two together, you know?
Right. But also, Kelly, the extraordinary extremity that this woman was only 6 months postpartum and she did this, leaving her baby, that tells you the level of extremity.
But listen to this. She got pregnant after she after they hatched this crazy plan, you know, so I got to go.
And can I say real quick?
Briefly.
If there's one more attack like the Breslin attack at a high school like they were possibly planning, this country is going to erupt.
It is going to erupt.
Just erupt.
I'm going to have a show on Wednesday with Harry Stryker. We're going to talk guns. Everybody should have a gun, be trained, carry a gun, and be ready to use it to defend yourself, your family, your friends, and innocent people. Thank you. And folks, we'll be right back. What's up, man?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Good. How's it going?
Pretty well. So I have a topic, constitutional hypocrisy.
Oh, is what?
Constitutional hypocrisy.
All right.
And, you know, the examples being the anti-Muslim rhetoric, the desire to, while people want everyone to be able to carry an AK-47.
Funny that you just said that, because I had a lady that just called in, and I just played a clip from a woman who is part of the court down in UTEP is on the she's a princess for UTEP University Texas El Paso, which is a pretty big school, and she's Muslim, and she was saying it was kind of heartbreaking to hear Trump talk and everything, but. Right after that, this lady called in and said things are going to erupt. And I said, you know, basically, everybody should be packing heat to defend themselves, because we don't know when the next attack is coming.
Yeah, that's not the kind of world I want to live in.
With people with Second Amendment rights or what?
No, where everyone's packing heat and everyone's armed to the teeth just because something might happen. I mean, you know, I think it's a sign of fear. It's giving in to the terrorism. I think it's weak. I think it's,
well,
you know.
But Bryce, ultimately it's a desire to survive. If you think that the government that you're living under is not committed to your safety, that they've got some other goal that's higher than that, you're going to be nervous. You're going to want to have a gun in your hand.
I don't disagree that fear causes that reaction. I just think that we should try to work our lives out so that we're not always just responding to fear.
Well, easy to say, but sometimes fear is justified.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times, though, what people do is they act out of fear, and they make things worse. They escalate rather than de-escalate. You know,
so,
if everyone's packing heat, then misunderstandings become gunfights. You're talking about an escalation. That's, you know, what we ought to be doing is de-escalating.
Well, like I say, easy to say. Hold on a second. Are you able to stay on for the next hour? Because we've got a five-minute break coming up.
I've got a meeting I got to go to. I figured I'd only be on for a couple minutes.
But you called at the wrong time. I have a break on the hour. I'll call you back. Okay, so basically just a little bit of time here before we take a break on the hour. But, you know, there's two sides to this thing. But I will guarantee you that the American spirit is not going to be held down any longer by this president's idiocy. And this idea that there is something that is more important than safety or common sense for Americans to be up to is ludicrous. And people are not going to be controlled by someone who doesn't have their best interests in mind anymore. We're going to defend ourselves. 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces 1450, KOBE 523 1450. We'll be back and we're going to pick it up some more. I got some more stuff on the Chris Barella situation. Okay, so it's 7:06, and today is the 11th. And what are your plans for the holidays? Huh? The topic of the Chris Borella situation, Kiki Vigil, County Commission, I talked about a little bit earlier. Now, I had mentioned that embezzlement is to convert to your personal use something that you had the lawful right to have control over. Now, as I'm reading this article here, I'm seeing that they're basically saying the law in New Mexico doesn't actually say that. So let me go over a few of these things here. Detective Ken Roberts, in this side of the Sun News, lead investigator, is the person who did the kind of a summary of this. His complaint lists five purchases that were deemed, quote, inappropriate, unquote, in Duran's 2009 audit, which characterized the use of those funds to pay for inmate labor and specific line item budget items as a misappropriation and illegal use of the inmate welfare fund. All right, now listen to this. The first one, a July 18th, 2012 purchase of for, quote, towels, mattresses, spoons, sports bras, and inmate razors in the amount of $5,179.80. Were the sports bras for women or obese men? I don't know. The second one, a January 17th, 2013 purchase for jail supplies to include inmate hygiene package in the amount of $6,000. Third one, a May 31, 2013 purchase for body soap and razors in the amount of $3,000. The fourth one, a December 20th, 2013 purchase for, quote, inmate shoes, unquote, in the amount of $2,796. And the last one, a February 19th, 2014 to March 18th, 2014 purchase for, quote, inmate labor in the amount of $3,915.51. Now, the article goes on to explain that it appears that the sheriff did not personally benefit from any of these things. Therefore, should it have been charged with embezzlement? And the statute on fraud reads, fraud consists of the intentional misappropriation or taking of anything of value that belongs to another by means of fraudulent conduct, practices, or representations. And Cynthia Clark of the 3rd Judicial District local DA's office says fraud isn't requiring that part of personal gain. The statute on embezzlement reads, embezzlement consists of a person embezzling or converting to the person's own use anything of value with which the person has been entrusted with fraudulent intent to deprive the owner thereof. So I guess you could read that to say that if you're embezzling in this state, it would mean that you're using a fraudulent intent, fraudulent means to take something away from someone else or another entity to deprive them, the owner, thereof. So, and then it goes on to talk about how the charges could change by the time they hit the grand jury. You know, the grand jury is the group of people that hears the initial charges and tries to decide if there's any evidence to support a prosecution. Now, Ms. Clark says that the main difference between fraud and embezzlement is the language regarding conversion and entrustment. That's really the distinguishing part. She says, this is a quote from her, that it gets converted to the defendant's own use. It's not really specifically asking for personal gain, but it talks about one's own use. It doesn't specifically require personal gain. It's just that money is converted to the defendant's own use. Whether it's personal or not, I guess, would be the interpretation in the case law. So anyway. I don't know. I mean, you want to be careful. You don't make embezzlement the same thing as fraud and then just have two different charges for the same thing. So anyway, that's, That's my kind of my take on it. I wouldn't be surprised if the charge for embezzlement went away. But now in that, and okay, so if you've got fraud, then let's just say embezzlement, they just drop the embezzlement part of it. They may or they may not, but you got to get a jury to buy into it too, you know? So are you going to convict this guy for misusing money for towels, mattresses, spoons, sports bras, intimate razors, jail supplies, inmate hygiene, body soap and razors, inmate shoes, and inmate labor? I don't know. I mean, there's got to be more to the case than that. Now, here is a little clip on this from KVIA.
Early this week, our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom confirmed Chris Varela posted bond Tuesday night in Lee County near Carlsbad. He was arrested earlier that day on allegations he misused inmate welfare money. But Doñana County Jail Administrator is charged with embezzlement over $20,000, fraud over $20,000, bringing a weapon into the jail, and willful neglect of duty. ABC 7's New Mexico Mobile Newsroom wanted to know why deputies arrested Varela on the spot instead of issuing a criminal summons. That was a case for several other high-profile public servants arrested recently in Doñana County. ABC 7's Jamie Warren is live from our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom. Jamie.
Estella, Varela is also on paid administrative leave. And the county attorney here at the government center says because this is a criminal matter, it's outside the scope of his employment. He says that means the county can only change the status of Varela's leave once they determine the 10-year jail director did something outside of county policy. But why was Varela arrested by deputies instead of being served a court summons? Captain Michael Kinney tells us they decided between the two on a case-by-case basis. In Varela's case, deputies determined they couldn't risk waiting on a court date that could potentially compromise an investigation.
We needed to be able to keep this individual who was accused of these crimes away from that area to prevent any conceivable, possible tampering, overexposure, influence on people who are either participating or helping with the investigation.
The sheriff's office says the reason Varela was transported all the way to Lovington, New Mexico was because other facilities outside the county were full. They also said the farther away he was, the less likely he would be recognized. Live from the government center with our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom, Jamie Warren, ABC 7.
Okay, Jamie. Thanks.
All right, so we've got a phone call from Walt. Good morning, Walt. Hope you're well, and what's on your mind?
Well, am I understanding you to say that Mr. Varela is being charged with buying a crime because he bought stuff for the inmates in the jail?
Well, I'm just going off of what's in the newspaper, but I believe that was the fruit of the investigation by Ken Roberts.
Well, and that don't make any sense to me then, because if he's buying things for the inmates, raises and stuff. Embezzlement, as I understand it, is it converts it to his own use. He uses it for himself, not for other people that would be in the jail.
Of course. Well, I'm just going off of, in these situations, you're using limited amount of information. I'm just taking in the information and kind of passing it on to the listeners, and you can draw your own conclusion. Traditionally,
and then also charged for taking a weapon in the jail. Isn't he administrator? Isn't he a jailer? I think there's an exception that lets jailers take weapons into the jail to protect themselves or to protect the jail.
That I don't know, but it would make sense that the jailers have to have some weapons to defend themselves. But I don't know what the rule on that is. If he broke the rule, he broke the rule. But in terms of embezzlement, the classic definition out of the common law is that you are given something to take care of that belongs to someone else and converted to your own use. Now, what the argument out of the sheriff's office and the DA is that he converted it to his own use by misappropriating it and misspending it. He doesn't have to personally benefit to have done that. That's what I think the argument is.
Well, and is there any law in New Mexico covers this inmate welfare fund thing? I couldn't find anything when I was looking.
It said there was none. The article said that there was not a specific law.
Well, then how? It sounds to me like this is Chef V. Hill and this is D'Antonio playing their political games, trying to just smear people that they don't like.
Well, I mean, okay, but the argument is going to come back that the county commission and maybe Billy Garrett and his golden earring pushed the sheriff to the point where he didn't feel like he could trust the county commission to work with him on this. That's got to be part of their position.
Well, I see that there was some discussion before that this has been investigated by the prior county attorneys, and that they didn't find there was any wrongdoing. I think this is just a witch hunt, and I think that they're out just to get, trying to make the county look bad, and trying to, I think there is a vendetta that Mr. B. Hill is wanting to get Mr. Barella for whatever reason, and I think that shows from some of the prior conversations.
Well, that's it's I guess going to ultimately be decided by a grand jury and a judge and a jury.
Well, and what happens then if they find that there's no that these charges are not valid, that they're trumped up, and that Mr. V. Hill and Mr. D'Antonio didn't really have a basis for it? Can they get impeached? Can they get taken out of office? What can happen?
There is, from what I understand, I'm stepping out into an area I really don't know, but. It seems to me, although I don't know this, if in theory the sheriff could be removed from office by a plebiscite or a popular gathering of signatures and a recall, I don't know.
Yeah, well, those just things are always interesting to me, but it sure does look like this is politically motivated, and again, Mr. D'Antonio and Ms. Clark. Seems they take a lot of cases that they end up dismissing later on because they don't have any evidence for. And I sure hope this isn't the case here because, you know, this investigation has been going on for a long time.
Well,
they should have it right by now.
It seems to me a lot of people would say, and those are some pretty serious charges you're laying out there, but it seems to me, Walt, that, you've got a broken county and the sheriff initially just wanted the funds that he was promised, he didn't get them, and that's what started the problem. And it started to degenerate to where he felt like he couldn't trust anything that was being told to him by the county. Now, whether that's accurate or not, I think most people will kind of make that observation.
Well, then his reaction is to act like he's in South America in the 1970s and 80s, and they just take a coup and take over everything, goes in, takes over the jail. Judge has already ruled he didn't have authority to do that, yet he did it.
Well, now, did the judge rule he didn't have the authority, or did the judge say, I'm going to stay this until we can have a hearing on the matter to see if he has the authority?
Well, there was a line in that restraining order that I read online that said the sheriff did not have the authority to have done that.
But it seems like the statute says clearly at the beginning of the statute that the jail is under the control of the sheriff, or these other people that were hired by the county commission. It is. I'm a little bit confused about the statute. What do you think?
Well, in Doniana County, from what I understand, in 1990, they took that control, and that control was given to an administrator, and that is one of those people that has that authority. And so it was for the sheriff up to that point, but after that point, it became the control of the county commission or the jail official.
But then the judge has to decide whether that was law or just practice that could be challenged through the statutes, right?
Well, and I think the judge ruled that in that order. The way I read it, there was that line that said he did not have the authority.
All right, well,
to
jail. Judges occasionally get overturned as well, even as astute and seasoned as Judge Arrieta.
Well, that's true. And there's a process. If the sheriff doesn't agree with that ruling, he got his hearing, and he'll be able to appeal that. But it just seems to me like he's trying to be a junta and take over everything.
Oh, my goodness. Does this type of thing happen in the Deep South, Walt?
Oh, there used to be back in the days of the KKK. You know, they tried to take over stuff. But you know, I think that's cool down in the South and trying to actually be part of America and act like Americans, which doesn't seem like what Mr. B. Hill's trying to do.
Well, there's a lot of accusations flying around, and I've listened to all sides, and I find – that when I'm listening to the parties, they make sense, and then I listen to the other one and they make sense. So I'm trying to make sense out of the whole thing myself, and I'm hoping the listeners can do that too.
Well, viva Kiki.
Well, thank you very much,
you later,
Walt.
Kevin.
Thank you, Walt. Appreciate you calling in. There's Walt, apparently a gentleman that has come from, was it Mississippi? Anyway, 7:21, we'll take a small break here. And then I got a little, and we have another call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning. This is Ted.
Yeah, Ted.
I need a little guidance from a legal counselor here. Reading this definition of fraud and then also embezzlement in the Las Cruces Sun News, let me just say that the statute on embezzlement reads, embezzlement consists of a person embezzling. That's a circular definition.
Yeah.
Do you have any further guidance from Black's Law Dictionary or anything else like that?
When you go to law school, there's certain stuff that kind of gets nailed into your brain and is some of these definitions and embezzlement coming out of the common law. Embezzlement is something that a person has legal right to access, you know, and they take that, they take that money and then they take it not for the person or the entity that they're working for, but they convert it. In other words, they bring it into their own control to benefit themselves. That is the definition of, I can look it up on the internet, but I mean, that's what it means.
And then on the fraud consists of, I'll skip the middle of it, by means of fraudulent conduct. I mean, it's just circular. I mean, and the other thing is that it looks like most of those things were for the welfare of the prisoners.
Yeah.
And a key word there is misappropriation. What the heck does that mean?
Well, to misappropriate means to misuse. So,
well, if,
yeah, okay,
if
I'll give you an
like
example. I'll give you an example here.
You're
a groundskeeper. Yeah. Let's just say you're a groundskeeper at the local golf course, and you take one of the golf carts and you drive it down to the 7-Eleven or Pickwick or whatever and buy a six pack and come back. You're misappropriating the cart to buy something for yourself. You're outside of what you're supposed to be doing, and you're misusing company property to do something for yourself or to do something you shouldn't have.
I can see that, but how are they twisting that to benefit him? Does it make his job easier, or what?
Benefit? All right. So here is from the Cornell website. Cornell Law has got a fantastic website, Legal Information Institute. Fraudulent taking, embezzlement, fraudulent taking of personal property by someone to whom it was entrusted. So that's the first element. You've got a hold of something that belongs to somebody else and you're entrusted with it. So the classic case, a person who's an accountant or a treasurer has got the lawful right to have the money and then they take it for themselves or they take it for something else. Most often associated with the misappropriation of money, embezzlement can occur regardless whether the defendant keeps the personal property or transfers it to a third party. So, all right, so maybe I stand corrected here. Embezzlement, perhaps a better definition, a more boiled down definition is that you've got the right to control something that you don't own and you misuse it. How about that?
That sounds good. This county has a vivid history of vendettas. One of the most famous vendettas was against Susana Martinez, against the former sheriff who ran the welcome.
Who's the sheriff's name?
I wish I could remember. Maybe one of the other callers can help you out.
Happy
but against the former sheriff and his son, who owned the Welcome Inn, and they had to bring a special prosecutor down from Santa Fe to dismiss the charges with prejudice after 7 years.
Wow, that's amazing. Thanks for the call, Ted.
Folks,
I'm 10 minutes over my break, so work with me here. I'm going to have to squeeze some ads in. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Well, maybe I learned something about embezzlement, but definitely the main thing of embezzlement is you're given control of somebody else's stuff. You have the legal right to access it, but you're supposed to take care of it. You're not supposed to misappropriate it, which means to misuse it. I guess we can forget about converting it to yourself, but that's normally how I've seen it used. We'll be right back. 523-1450.
Hey, Kelly.
Hold on. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Yeah, Serge. Hey, that was Mike Gonzalez Sr., the owners of Security Concepts.
Okay, thanks. Hey, listen, man, I was thinking you were going to call in during the first hour.
Oh, okay.
Let's just do it on another day because I'm kind of caught up in the sheriff situation.
All right.
Thanks, man. All right, bye-bye. All right, it's 7:30. It is Friday. Isn't it Friday? I think it's Friday. Friday, December 11th. Yeah. The days kind of, things are so busy this time of the year, the days fall into one another and you lose track of time. So Walt calls up and, I mean, I just think there's two ways of looking at this. You can claim that Kiki has done a witch hunt. He's like Walt says, and misappropriated power and is seeking revenge and trying to embarrass the county. But what about seeing it from the other angle? The county did not work with the sheriff. They misled him. They embarrassed him. They kept funds and equipment from him that he was due. And Billy Garrett acted like a king. Now they're saying, Ben Rawson is accusing Kiki of acting like a king, taking over the jail. But how about Kiki sees Billy Garrett as acting like a king, working on his own private, and here's the problem with leftism. It's always a set of private commitments that are forced onto the public who are, generally speaking, largely indifferent or opposed to these standards. And because liberalism presents itself in operation just like a religion, the people who are leftists don't back off because they're fighting for the defense of the realm. That's their universe that they're defending. So you could make an argument, if not for Billy Garrett driving the county in a far left position, denying the sheriff his funds, this would have never happened. I don't know. I mean, that certainly doesn't defend everything else, but at least it's an explanation. All right, here's from a meeting from last night, town hall, and it was apparently a fiery event, and I think it was down south, Sunland Park or whatever. And here's Sheriff Vigil on interruptions at town hall being highly inappropriate.
Sheriff Kiki Vigil was also last night's meeting. He told me here at the sheriff's office earlier today that he was taken aback by the attitude of some of the officials who led it.
But the question is, do I have enough troops? No, I don't. That is the honest truth. The reason I don't is because we're one of the lowest paid.
Okay, Sheriff Vigil.
Okay.
A question and answer session during the town hall.
And I was going to go into the reasons. And Mr. Nelson Gittin got on the mic and told me pretty much to hush and sit down.
This was a very specific question it was asked. There are some political issues, concerns going on with the sheriff's department and the county.
Were you making it a political issue?
No, ma'am, I was not.
Despite the turmoil, Vigil tells me he's gotten a lot of support from residents who were there to witness it.
A lot of people came up to me and say, how dare these county officials come down to our town and threaten us by getting escorted by the state police for speaking out.
All right, so it doesn't really list what in the title of this, but it was at Sunland Park. The question was disincorporation, And so that's another issue here. Should Sunland Park disincorporate? So I've got another clip here from this, but it's another issue that's kind of brewing. And this is also from KVIA. And Sunland Park residents fired up at this incorporation meeting. And Dona Ana County Commissioner Dr. David Garcia and County Manager Julia Brown held a town hall meeting Wednesday night at San Martin de Porres Church. County officials answered questions about the disincorporation effort by being pushed by residents in Sunland Park. And petitioners confirmed to ABC 7 Wednesday they have collected enough signatures to move forward with the disincorporation. So here's on that. And get to a phone call here before we do that. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Walter.
Yeah, Walter.
Well, and you know, the thing that I'm seeing here with this is that it seems disturbing to me that attorney's office is trying to litigate this or convict Mr. Barella in the press.
Well, I mean, doesn't that always happen with high profile cases? The DA's office rolls out their version of what happened, why the person is being charged. I mean, you don't exactly expect them to be his defense attorney, do you?
Well, but, you know, there's all these press conferences that they have that talk of, you know, and then there's an article by the DA in the newspaper. Is that what you were reading from?
The one that I was reading from was from the – no, this is reported Barella did not pocket money. That's where all my information was coming from on the front page of the Sun News. But so you're saying that the DA's got an article in here, too. I'll have to sniff it out.
I was misunderstanding. You were saying Ms. Clark, and you were putting from an article, but that was just the Sun News reporting that she was saying.
The extraordinary reporting of the Sun News, which could win another Pulitzer this year, Walter.
Well, they've won awards before. You know, I don't know much about them. But anyway, it just seems that there's an effort to convict Mr. Barella in the press the case has ever even been submitted to a grand jury.
Walter, do you think the fact that Chris Barella is openly gay is part of the bias against him?
You know, I have no idea what Mr. Barella's sexual preferences are, and it really is irrelevant.
Oh, well, certainly it is irrelevant. I don't mean to be non-PC. I was just asking if you thought the fact that it was well known that he was gay might have factored in at some level.
I think that's ridiculous you're even bringing that up.
Are you ashamed to hear
that there's this effort to put all this information out there and even false information from what it's sounding like, and it's just disturbing that the DA would continue that type of political activity and the sheriff and you know, it's disgusting.
Walter, we really appreciate your comments. I hope you have a wonderful day and get some R&R. Walter, I think you were worrying about this too much. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. I was just curious if somebody thought, you know, Chris, it's well known Chris Barella is gay. I've talked to him a few times on the phone. He sounds like a nice guy. I'm not saying that it had anything to do with it. I was just curious, but apparently it's a shameful question, and that question needs to be sent to the furnace and burned up. But and we've got another call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who is this?
Good morning. It's Lori.
Morning, Lori. Hope you're doing well. And what's on your mind?
Well, I was at a town hall meeting in Sunland, and, you know, I've never seen a county commission so vicious. They're a
really?
Bunch of clowns. Yes, very vicious. Did not allow the sheriff to speak, to let us know what was going on with security, the public safety. They really did not help. And I'm really appalled that Dr. Garcia did not step up and say enough.
Well, you think he was maybe he was influenced or maybe he was intimidated?
I get that. I get that a couple of the commissioners are a little intimidated by Golden Ear, Garrett, and Mr. Hancock is what I get that. And I think it's really bad. I mean, they're vicious. They're just vicious people. Ooh. They were there and they just did not want him there. You could tell. And the will of the people were yelling, let him speak.
They were yelling.
There's nothing wrong.
My goodness.
Yes, they were
my
in the
goodness.
Back yelling.
Well, that's
let
that's,
the sheriff speak.
All right,
let
so
the sheriff speak.
Who was control, as far as you could tell, of these people in there, who you know, they're trying to shout down, apparently, Kiki, but who was controlling the meeting?
I believe it was Nelson Gooden.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yes, sir. It's very interesting, and I mean, to the point where they just want to, I get the feeling that they want to shut the sheriff up, do not bring anything up, just be quiet and take your turn, like Mr. Hancock had said one time.
Mm-hmm. Was Mr. Hancock fall asleep at any time during the meeting?
No, he wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, at one point, it was public that he did tell the sheriff, you know, it took him 2 years to find the bathroom. Take a seat. Take a turn.
It seems
to me like the sheriff is not wired to be like them. That's why they don't like him. And the witch vendetta, I really think it's against that sheriff that is trying to do good for the people,
his
voters and the public safety. And I think they're trying to tie his hands. And also for that caller, Walt, that called at the beginning,
yeah.
There's nothing American about being a part of that KKK,
yeah.
and being a part of America and be a KKK member. There's nothing American
That's true. Well, I got another call here, but that is certainly, you know, Walt's from the South, so we got to forgive him a little bit. Thanks for the call. Great call, Lori. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Maria.
Good morning, Maria. Hope you're well, and what's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling regarding the sheriff and all the controversy going on right now.
Go ahead.
I believe we're missing the point here. At the press conference that I was present at, and the county manager came up to serve the sheriff, don't you think she should have been there instead and said, one of my employees is under investigation, what can I do to help?
Interesting. Interesting question. So what do you think was in her mind?
I think she wanted to make a point and embarrass the sheriff.
Wow. All right. So, but you know, what do you think about the situation? It seems like these powerful figures in the county are at war with one another. What do you think?
Well, I think it should not be personal, and I believe the county manager made it personal when she went and served him during his press conference.
That was a reverse slam dunk in his face, wasn't it, on live TV?
Yeah, and she's making it personal rather than go there and say, what can I do to help with this investigation?
Do you think that the county manager, Julia Brown, owes an apology to Kiki for her a very kind of over-the-top behavior?
Not only to Kiki, but to the county, residents.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing to believe that our county is being run by someone who makes this personal rather than
to
spare us, the taxpayers.
I agree. And, you know, with her attitude, I wouldn't have been as surprised that she displayed on TV if she had slapped him afterwards.
Exactly.
Great.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Maria, thank you so much. Great call. All right, folks, got to take a break here. Fell behind, and we're catching up here. But great calls today. Wonderful. I wish I had been at that meeting. I wish I had seen the naked power struggle in that meeting. Sunland Park. They're fighting over the carcass of Sunland Park. Kelly O'Connell, 743, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, 523-1450. All right, so we've been talking about just recently here on the air, the meeting down in Sunland Park that was supposed to have been a real, I guess it sounds like it was a bit of a zoo. There was a lot of confusion and shouting, and people were being told to sit down and shut up. 747, by the way, and AM Las Cruces here. Let me play a clip from that for you.
President, about what would happen if the city disincorporated. ABC 7's Jamie Warren was at tonight's meeting. She files this report from our New Mexico moment.
Petitioners confirmed with me that they have enough signatures to move forward with the disincorporation process, and they'll be turning them in to the county clerk's office next week. But the possibility of their city being no longer fired a lot of people up here at tonight's meeting. Dissatisfaction from dozens in a packed town hall when County Attorney Nelson Gooden explained all Sunland Park services would turn to the county if the city dissolved. While disincorporation isn't on the ballot yet, County Manager Julia Brown told the crowd some information coming from the disincorporators is false. Residents listened closely to the process of disincorporation, and some got frustrated as officials explained it.
Well, of course, I'm sad because I'm one of the employees, of course, Sheriff of Park. I work for motor vehicle, losing motor vehicle, fire department, and all the help that we do have, you know, and like fire department, police, they'll take more time to arrive here to us. So I do feel sad, you know.
There's some of the information we've seen that I think may be incomplete or I don't want to say necessarily misleading, but I think there's been some incomplete information.
Two of the petitioners were here at tonight's meeting, but they left before we were able to get a comment from them. Now, disincorporation is still not on the ballot. First, the county clerk has to verify that 25% of registered voters are on that petition. Then the commissioners have to verify that as well before a special election can be held. Reporting from Sunland Park with our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom, Jamie Warren, ABC 7.
And so fighting over the disincorporation of, what do you think about that? What's the argument to disincorporate? You know, seems drastic. It seems like, you know, it seems the direction a city doesn't want to go in. And is Dona Anna fighting over the carcass of Sunland Park? Sunland Park has been hit with a virus of corruption. It has weakened the body of this once proud animal. All right, folks, just catching up with these last ads here. So let's take a little break. And I'm going to finish up with a little Trump. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 523-1450 at 751 on the button. All right, so just a few minutes before we end the show and get into the weekend. What do you think, though, banning Muslims until the security or the background check system is fixed? At this point in Syria, we know that, number one, the Syrian refugees that are coming out are not they don't have any paperwork. There's no way to background check them. There's literally none. Number one. Number two, we know that 20% of the citizens that live in Syria or the residents support jihad. Number three, we know that number has been increased because there's a large number of foreign nationals that have come in and are now jihadists and using that as the base. And number four, we know that a lot of people that are coming from the Middle East who claim to be Syrians are not. It's just total chaos. Now we've got the attacks in California. People are extremely nervous. And by the way, we're doing a gun show on Wednesday, but here's a little bit from O'Reilly and Trump.
His opinion on Muslim funding from coming to the USA has ignited perhaps the most intense political firestorm we've ever seen. Overnight, Bloomberg conducted an internet poll of about 600 folks. 37% agree with Trump overall, 50% oppose. But when you break it down to Republican primary voters, 65% agree, 22% dissent.
I want to ask one question before we get any further into this. And in your mind, whether you're Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, whatever, what do we have to gain by taking risks with the immigrants? Haven't we already proved we're the greatest country in history for, immigrants? What else do we have to prove? Why take a risk? We got a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Briefly, who's this?
Yeah, Kelly, this is Jerry. I wanted to make two points. One is I heard Mark Levin say something that one is that immigration policy is to benefit this company, not to benefit the people coming in.
Agreed.
And two, the other thing is without God, I don't think this country has the protection it needs to survive.
Great points. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. Number one, the immigration policy for the United States should benefit us, not harm us or put us in harm's way. Number one. Number two, without God's blessing, we can't make it. The subtext of that is that if you're bringing in a bunch of people who are totally opposed to your religion, it's only going to weaken. All right. So anyway, we're so far into this crazy president's reign that we think it's our job to heal global warming, whether it's happening or not. We believe we have to have porous borders to bring all the people up from Mexico and Central America, South America, because they need a new place to live. And it doesn't matter what inconvenience or danger. All right, so I play a little bit more of this clip. We just got 1 minute left.
Now, from his campaign headquarters here in New York City is Donald Trump. So just to get you on the record, if you are elected president, what will you do regarding Muslims, non-American citizens, traveling to the USA? What will you do?
Very simple. First of all, as you know, I have many good friends who are Muslims. They're terrific people, and they are calling me on an hourly basis, thanking me for bringing up this point. I would try and find out what is going on. Why the hatred? Why are people willing to fly planes into the World Trade Center? Why did those two people last week they get married? Why did they, and you explained this to me, go into a room and start shooting everybody, Bill? It's a very, very serious problem, and somebody had to bring it up. Now, maybe it's not politically correct to do it, but somebody had to bring it up, and a lot of people are very thankful that I did it.
Yeah, but you didn't answer my question. What would you do to Muslims overseas vis-a-vis coming to the USA?
I would, number one, I try and get to the bottom of what's going
on.
I would set up a very strong system, and I'm very happy that tonight, because last night, I'm not sure it was mentioned, but you said this is a temporary system. I would set up it's a temporary ban on not everybody, but many. I would set up a system to see who qualifies to come in, who doesn't, until we come down with the answer.
All right,
so, I mean, who can argue with that? I mean, the way he first announced it, maybe it was in politic, but folks, we got to protect ourselves. What the president has kind of lured us into this idea that we have to have this perfect world where nobody's treated unfairly, unless you're white or Christian or whatever. But he's drawing us into enormous danger. Is that why we're here? Is that what we're about? Is it our job to sacrifice ourselves for some crazy ideology? Have a great weekend, Kelly O'Connell. Thanks for tuning in. I really enjoyed hanging out with you. Have a great weekend. See you back in 2 days. Ciao. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell.